it just takes my breath away. To think that here we are in the great monarch butterfly controversy, that SRN has riveted our attention to the fact that there are fewer monarch butterflies in their migration from Mexico since 1993. And here I'm talking about people's views of politics in America and proving that the President of the United States is a pathological liar. Obviously, my focus is on the wrong things. There are so many more important things to be talking about, like the migration of the monarch butterfly in comparison to 1993. You know, I have been critical in the past of Salem Radio News, the Christian news source, but I owe them an apology. When you can bring out riveting and pertinent stories like that, well, I'm humbled just to be able to share the same air that they breathe. It is interesting. I'm going to return to the turf that we were on just because I'm myopic and fascinated by it. The Republican lack of faith in the decision-making of their own party is, I find, heartening. Just 36% of Republicans say that they believe that their party lawmakers will make good decisions. 36% of Republicans view Republicans favorably. 64%, essentially two-thirds, of Republicans don't trust Republican politicians. Think about that. That's the hope, folks. That is the hope. That's why I begin this program by saying that this program is devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of our society. 64% of Republicans now know that they can't trust Republicans. It's about 40% of Democrats that know they can't trust Democrats. And what that means, ladies and gentlemen, is that the largest segment of our society has begun to figure it out. That it isn't about which party controls Congress. It's not about which party occupies the White House. Makes no difference. The institution is broken. The people who populate it are rotten to the core. There are no good choices. We ought not be focused on whom we elect because it can't be fixed. It's time that we recognize that our military doesn't provide our freedom, that our government does not provide our security, and the media does not tell us the truth. And deal with it. Once you come to that position, then you're at least willing to question your politics, your religion. And for the first time, maybe in your life, you're open to the truth. And then what God has to say might resonate for the first time. But so long as you're in that 37% of Democrats, this poll says they just think that the president is doing a wonderful job. They're just so enamored with him. So long as you're in that same 37%, then you're no different than a religious zealot. You're no different than the person who has ingested the religion of Christianity or Islam or socialist secular humanism. Evidence and reason will not resonate with you. They're meaningless to you. You'll cling to the myth even when proven to be wrong. You're beyond hope. But two-thirds of Americans, some 60 to 70% of Americans, for the first time ever, recognize that their party, their political affiliation isn't the answer. Now, there's hope in those numbers. White House officials said that they look forward to the aftermath of the president's speech, where he was a pathological liar, to try to gain some momentum. He still receives low grades for his handling of the implementation of his health care law. You know, what I didn't say in his bad year, the president lied about the central, most irritating plank of his health care law, which was that he was going to impose what he thought that health care should be for Americans and not let Americans choose. That you could not have a policy that covered the issues that you wanted covered. You know, if you were a single man and you didn't want maternity coverage, you could choose not to have maternity coverage. If you were opposed to using drugs, you didn't have to pay a premium to have drug rehabilitation coverage. If you were opposed to psychiatric mind-altering drugs, you didn't have to pay for that provision. But no, this president, he lied when he told the American people, if you like your policy, you can keep it. It was an absolute lie. He lied when he described his law as the Affordable Care Act, because the policies of those Americans who had health care, they were all canceled. And the new policies that were compliant with what he decided you ought to have as the dictator-in-chief were twice as expensive. I know, personally. And I've read the accounts of thousands of Americans who also had that experience. I have built many websites, large institutional websites. I built a website for a company that was once valued at $3 billion. And it was very effective at completing financial transactions, at presenting product and completing the financial transactions relative to those products, and handling the back-end databases, integrating the consumer and the people that made the things that they wanted to buy. And I did that more than a decade ago, and this president with $1 billion can't create a website that works. And yet, 37% of Americans say they approve his management of health care. What are you, the 37% that are on food stamps? The 37% that are on Medicare and Medicaid? 59% disapprove. And his economic ratings at 43% positive and 55% negative are not much better. Here's a man that has been devastating economically, increasing the U.S. deficit from $10 to $17 trillion, destroying the value of our currency, who has never worked a day in his life in private industry. And yet 43% of Americans think that he's done a pretty decent job. At least 55% to know the truth. Americans are similarly negative about the president's handling of two major foreign policy issues, Iran and Syria. Yet, this president came within a whisper of starting World War III. Had the president gotten his way and begun to bomb Syria, which the Republicans in Congress, not all of them, of course, you had I Just Love a War, John McClown, but it had not been for the reluctance of Republicans in Congress and then Putin for coming up with the plan that saved the world from world war, of destroying Syria's chemical weapons as opposed to bombing Syria back into the Stone Age. We would have been engaged right now in World War III. In Iran, this president cleared the decks for the Iranian nuclear program. He essentially gave Iran everything they wanted, essentially eliminated the sanctions. Iran is back to selling as much oil as they did before the sanctions were initially imposed, and they haven't been required to destroy any part of their nuclear bomb initiatives. 4 in 10 Americans approve of his handling of the situation in Iran. That means that 4 in 10 Americans are just completely ignorant or they're irrational. Just 1/3 approve of his handling of the Syrian conflict. 30% of Americans then think that taking America into the precipice of war, siding on the America and providing weapons in a war on the side of Mujahideens who want to establish an Islamic state for not only that region, but for the whole world, is a swell plan. that putting America on the sides of men who use suicide bombers, who put guns in the hands of little children, who murder fathers in front of their families, and who rape women is a good idea. The president gets positive marks for his handling of terrorism, with half of the country approving of how he has handled these threats. Well, since there is no war on terrorism, I suppose you could give the president a 50% approval rating for that which is mythological. There has never been a war on terrorism. There cannot be a war on terrorism. War on a tactic is, well, to use the same word I've used up to this point, moronic. It is stupid. You can't declare a war against a tactic. And if you were to measure it as a war against a tactic, America's invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan increased terrorism astronomically, almost beyond calculation, rather than diminishing terrorism. Our war against the tactic has dramatically increased the use of the tactic. Assessments of his recent recommendations for limiting the National Security Agency's surveillance programs are more equivocal. 4 in 10 Americans say that they believe those steps are about right to deal with the problems highlighted by result of leaks of classified information by former NSA analyst Edward Snowden. About 3 in 10 say the steps do not go far enough, while 2 in 10 say they go too far. 20% of Americans. I think that the NSA has been crippled and that it should be left alone to disregard the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. That is almost mind-boggling in its scope. We're going to, in future programs, talk about the NSA's reach, the fact that they're using apps on your phone to track everything about you, the fact that they're representing the NSA using cartoon characters for children, the fact that they're establishing blimps overhead in the Washington area to watch people's every move. We're going to continue to study the destruction of the U.S. Constitution, the war on the U.S. Constitution by the U.S. government and its NSA on future programs. When Americans were asked whether or not the pathological liar that is the President of the United States, that every chance he has been given to tell the truth, that he has preferred a lie, even when the truth works for his agenda, he has chosen to lie. When asked whether or not he was honest and trustworthy, 52% says that he does not understand the problems of the people and was not honest in his portrayal of the issues, and 51% said, "Yep, he's an honorable dude." I mean, it's amazing. 50% of Americans don't see through the man. And almost every major issue that he has confronted in the last 5 years, what he has said has been the opposite of what is true. Like his entire State of the Union address was designed for him to act unilaterally in opposition to what he said was growing economic inequality. The fundamental statement is untrue. It's not honest. His fundamental statements about the most important issues regarding the country and his justifications for his actions based on lies. And yet 50% of Americans don't recognize him as a pathological liar. Maybe that's why 50% of Americans remain religious. At this point, 46% support the Affordable Care Act. 49% oppose it, with Democrats strongly supportive and Republicans even more strongly opposed. Just under 4 in 10 say that the law should be repealed. The Affordable Care Act, which is the opposite of affordable, did two things. One is that it made health care for those who are responsible unaffordable. And by not having pre-existing conditions considered, and by having anyone, regardless of how reckless they may have been in their lives, insurable at the same rate of somebody that at the same premium as somebody who has taken care of themselves, you know. Now, it doesn't matter if you smoke. Doesn't matter if you're obese. Doesn't matter if you have done things with drug use or unprotected sex, particularly homosexual sex, that has made you more prone to AIDS. Doesn't matter anymore. Reckless lifestyles, not being accountable, doesn't matter anymore. That's what it changed. So for the cost of health care to be equal for all, it means that it has to be much more expensive for those who were and have been responsible. It's just another aspect of the socialization of America. It's amazing that only 4 in 10 say that it should be repealed. It is going to be the final straw that breaks America's economic back. It's already broken, but one more straw, particularly when businesses at the end of this year are confronted with the same draconian choices that were individuals. 6 in 10 say that the federal website, healthcare.gov, is not working, and it should be a majority that say that it's a sign of broader problems with the law. The problem of the site not working is minuscule compared to the dictatorial nature of the program, where Americans are no longer free to choose their own health care. You get what the government prescribes, and nothing less, nothing more. Roughly equal number of Americans say they will vote for the Republican candidate for the House and say they will vote for the Democratic candidate. It doesn't matter who the candidate is. We view our party in America as we view our religious affiliation. At the same time, more than 6 in 10 say they're inclined to look around for someone else to vote for than the incumbent in their district. Republicans have a clear advantage on which party would better handle the economy than the federal budget deficit. GOP lead on the economy is their largest in the post-ABC polling period since 2002. Republicans also have an advantage on the question of which party has better ideas about the right size and role of the federal government. The rhetoric of Republicans as it relates to deficits and downsizing government is sound. The problem is that their actions are not sound. They say one thing and do another. You know, George Bush presented himself as a conservative. And look what he did to the deficit and to government spending during his time in office. Well, the Republican rhetoric, if you could believe it, if they actually did what they said, would be all right in these issues. Unfortunately, they can't be trusted. We'll be back with Shattering Myths after the break. In the first hour of our program, I referenced a study, in fact, the article referenced a study that was done by leading economists, Harvard's Roz Chetty being the signatory on this, that shows that the president was lying when he gave the State of the Union address. Now, this study came out about a week and a half ago. So the president had all the opportunity in the world to fact-check his central claim, which is that there is diminished upward mobility and that there is greater inequity economically. He had that opportunity because the facts are now in, and he chose to lie. Washington Post reports, children growing up in America today are just as likely, no more, no less, to climb the economic ladder as children born more than a half century ago, a team of economists reported. This was this past Thursday. Even though social movements have delivered better career opportunities for women and minorities, and government grants have made college more accessible, one thing has stayed constant. If you're growing up poor today, you appear to have the same odds of staying poor in your adulthood that your grandparents did. It's all the programs designed to create an unlevel playing field, to provide college admissions on a proactive basis. Affirmative action is what we called it. So that minorities and inner city kids were treated unfairly, favorably unfairly. Their parents were given money. They were fed meals in schools. They were given scholarships to attend schools. That they were all these huge programs, welfare, the earned income tax credits. All of them have had absolutely no influence whatsoever. We've squandered much as $10 trillion and have nothing to show for it. There's no difference. It's made absolutely no difference. Lyndon Johnson's Great Society program squandered as much as $10 trillion, maybe as much as $15 trillion, could even be more, and has had no influence whatsoever. This landmark new study from a group led by Harvard's Roz Chetty suggests that any advances in opportunity provided by expanded social programs, government programs, have been offset by other changes in economic conditions. In other words, they're saying that all those programs, you know, we're a liberal institution. We don't want to poo-poo those programs. Pay for our university. We get grants for part of those kind of programs. So it's other things that have just offset it. When you fail in business, you go out of business. When you fail in sports, you lose the game. Those who consistently fail don't get the opportunity to try the same thing again and again. After 50 years of social engineering having failed, you have to be insane to continue with it, to think you're going to get a different result. Those findings add up to a surprising take, not to me, on the status of the iconic American dream that cast Washington's rolling debate about the consequence of economic inequality in a new light, one that the president obviously didn't pick up on. There has been no change in economic inequality. There has been no change in mobility. All of these great society programs have produced no result. We have squandered tens of trillions of dollars for nothing. The paper suggests that it is not true that mobility itself is getting lower. In other words, the President of the United States lied, said Lawrence Katz, a Harvard economist and mobility scholar, who was not one of the paper's authors, but reviewed the findings. People born near the bottom tend to stay at the bottom. You know, there's a reason for that. People who are born to a religious father adopt the father's religion. People, and I'm not being sexist here, the fact is that the surveys of behaviors demonstrates conclusively that children, whether they be men or women, do not follow their mother's religion, they do not follow their mother's politics, that the vast preponderance, overwhelming preponderance, follow their father's. If they have a father that is not successful in his work, they will not be successful in their work. That's just the bottom line here. The paper reveals that it is not true that mobility itself is getting lower. That means the President of the United States lied. Americans have always placed great faith in economic mobility. The idea that any child born into poverty can grow up to be middle class, or that a middle class kid can grow up to be rich. Still, every bit as true as it was 50 years ago. Chetty and his colleagues, Nathaniel Hindren of Harvard, Patrick Klein, and Emmanuel Saez of the University of California at Berkeley, and Nicholas Turner of the Treasury Department's Office of Tax Analysis collectively examined millions of anonymous earnings records and found that mobility has not changed. But what do the religious zealots do? Let's ignore the facts. Incorporating results from a previous study dating back to the 1950s, the authors concluded that measures of social mobility have remained remarkably stable over the second half of the 20th century in the United States. They went back to the 1950s, of course, as that would be the baseline to evaluate whether or not the radical change that was made to America by LBJ were effective or not. The answer is not. You know, in business, when you have a product that is not successful, you discontinue it. Or you go bankrupt. But that's not the nature of government. Heather Bosley, who leads the Center for Equitable Growth, a new inequality-focused think tank, said that the findings were making me rethink my previous belief that mobility may be declining, particularly for men. So here's all the evidence. It says there is no change, and here's a woman who's employed at a Center for Equitable Growth, which is an inequality-focused think tank. I mean, that's her religion, baby. And she says, well, you know, maybe the facts would cause me to rethink my previous beliefs. Maybe cause you to rethink your previous beliefs. The facts prove that your previous beliefs were false. That's the problem with religion and politics. When evidence demonstrates unequivocally that your faith is based in something which is undeniably false, the faithful don't change. This is an amazing statement. Some could view the results as a failure of programs, as the Pell Grants, for example, the Head Start program, or nutritional supplements for children that are intended to promote mobility. Some might view that the Great Society programs failed. No kidding, Sherlock. It's an interesting story, related story. It was reported by CNN. Venture capitalist, a fellow named Tom Perkins. I know Tom Perkins. His venture capital firm that he founded was the firm. It was interesting. They got a lot of credit because they copied the Japanese strategies of economics, where in Japan, for Japanese companies to have an unfair advantage, for them to compete favorably in international markets, they would collude together. It's something that is prohibited for American companies. And this idea of how companies would collude to work together and create synergies of companies that have diverse shareholder bases and diverse manufacturing interests is something that Kleiner Perkins copied. And Tom Perkins was one who used to tout that, and his venture capital firm was the premier firm. Now, venture capitalists, I know it has a negative connotation today. People call them vulture capitalists. But the fact is that without venture capitalists, the opportunity for businesses to grow from small mom-and-pop operations to mid-size and large would be extraordinarily difficult. Banks just don't loan money in those kinds of cases. You need somebody who's willing to take an equity stake, who's willing to invest private equity for those kind of businesses to have any chance of success. I've dealt with a lot of venture capitalist firms, and sometimes they're their own worst enemy. I don't want to go out and say that they're the best thing in the world, but they are an extraordinarily important tool in a free economy. what he said that came under attack over the weekend was that he compared the experience of wealthy Americans to a deadly Nazi campaign that preceded the Holocaust. Writing from the epicenter of progressive thought, San Francisco, this is his quote, I would call attention to the parallels of fascist Nazi Germany to its war on 1%, namely its Jews, to the progressive war on the American 1%, namely the rich, he wrote, opening a letter to the editor of the Wall Street Journal. So he's equating the Obama-sponsored war on the rich, the Obama war against inequality, the class warfare that this president is trying to fight, to divide this country. He's equating that to the war on the Nazi Germans 1%. Yeah, 1% of Germans were Jews. And Hitler's issue with the Jews is they have all the money, and that they've gotten all the money because they stole it from us Germans. The exact same mentality. Back in a moment. Tom Perkins of Kleiner Perkins wrote, "This is a very dangerous drift in our American thinking. Kristallnacht was unthinkable in 1930. Is its descendant, progressive radicalism, unthinkable today?" I know there's a lot of people, and we have Larry on the line, who will say this comparison is not fair because you're comparing Nazi Germany to liberals in America, and there's this tendency to view liberal, socialistic, communist as the antithesis, as the far opposite of fascists. But the fact of the matter is they aren't opposites. They're different sides of the same coin. The only difference in fascism and socialism is ownership. And economic ownership has no viability because the government has absolute control over all assets, which means that the government essentially owns that which it controls. There's really no difference in fascism and communism. And so the left will scream bloody murder when being associated with a fascist government. But it fits here. And there'll be others who'll say, when you're looking at Kristallnacht, which was when the Nazis broke the glass of all of the Jewish synagogues, and then they broke the glass of all of the Jewish stores and looted both, burned both, and began to haul Jews away into concentration camps, that their animosity at the Jews cannot be equated to the left's animosity for those who are the most successful, the most successful 1% in the country. One's racial, they say, one is economic. But recognize that if you read Mein Kampf, if you read the anti-Jewish propaganda that was promoted by Adolf Hitler at that time, it was all this manifestation of the angst of the Versailles agreements and the penalizing of Germany economically. Hitler blamed on this 1% Jews, and then went further to say that not only are you burdened by that and the 1% imposing this unfairly upon you, but you've got that 1% who has accumulated the wealth of Germans, and they've done so through inappropriate means. And so it the parallels are stunning. And, Hitler essentially called for a war on that 1%. Just as the 1%ers are calling, the 99%ers are calling a war on 1%. And here's the President of the United States now with a speech that embodies the very thing that this venture capitalist was warning us against. Fascinating, isn't it? Larry, what do you think?
Well, I think at one time liberal, you know, if you were a Jeffersonian liberal, that meant you were pro-liberty, and that meant
right.
that you were for limited government, and liberal has now come to mean the liberal use of government. And any time that we hand over personal individual rights to a government who has, you know, liberal use, corrupt people are going to come to the top, and they're going to take what's yours. that's history.
Yeah,
you
that's why the
historically illiterate to believe anything else.
Yeah, that's why Perkins' comments about comparing the 99%ers that want to take what the 1% have as being fascist in their nature. In fact, he even wrote in the Nazi arena or the Nazi era, it was racial demonization, and now it is class demonization. And that's
right,
really the epitome of this president's mantra.
You have the same effect either way. I mean, look, I just had a debate with a woman who told me that the Jews are getting her to this day.
Yeah.
I said, so you,
oh, it's
you
just popular. I get an email. I get emails all the time from people who have been sold a bag of goods that in conspiratory theories that the Jews are the bankers of the world, that the Jews are the control of the media, that the Jews are manipulating everything, that the protocols of the elders of Zion is a true account, and that you know you're a Zionist because you're not holding the Jews accountable for everything that they have done to steal everything from us. It's utter and complete nonsense. It's time we wake up. Larry, stay with us. We're going to turn the page and turn to the Torah after Shattering Myths continues after the commercial break.